This past week, I came across a poem by Lynn Ungar. She's also a minister. And it struck me to my core, so I just wanted to share a part of it with you guys. This poem was originally written in 2016, and it's titled Bullies. Might as well admit it, the bullies are running the school. No teacher, no parent, no principal is stepping in. They will take what they can, add it to their hoard, and toss some bright coin of power to the henchmen who roam the halls. I wish I knew how to make it safe. I wish I knew how to send us all back to science, to language, to music. The bullies will not be satisfied because brutality does not satisfy. They have set the terms of a game no one can win. But don't hide out alone. We're gathering in the library. We're holed up in the art room with our colored pens. And we're yelling in the soundproofed practice rooms. We've brought our instruments to the band. We've brought our voices to the choir. We still have our words to print in the bulletin and the yearbook and the poetry chapbook. We are still determined to put on the play. We probably won't catch the conscience of the king, who is utterly without shame. But we have come together to learn our lines, to sing our songs, to live the lives the bullies cannot imagine. And guess what, church? Let's hear it for that. Well, guess what, church? That is also why we are here this morning. To remind ourselves what it means to live the lives the bullies cannot imagine. Jeremiah, whose voice we heard in the first reading, is the great lamenter of all the prophets. Nobody can lament like Jeremiah. Anybody here felt like doing some lamenting lately? I know I have. And it's a sacred thing to do. When we feel discouraged, when things are so far from the way they should be, the first thing we have to do is lament. Feel the feelings. Cry out. Knowing that something's wrong and truth-telling about it is its own holy work. Might as well admit it. The bullies are running the school. Or, as Jeremiah says, woe to shepherds who mislead and scatter the flock. In the gospel, Jesus' disciples are described as feeling like sheep without a shepherd. Boy, does that hit home for us. And part of his counsel, when he knows that they're starting to feel weighed down with all the discouragement, is come away by yourselves and rest a while. Isn't that beautiful? When you've been running so hard, when you've been worrying so hard, when your brain is fried and your heart is weary and the problems just keep coming and you don't know what to do, Jesus' advice isn't you should do more or just push through. He says, take care of yourself. Make sure you eat. Make sure you sleep. Take time out for a moment and breathe. Give yourself permission to separate from the crowd, from the busyness, from all that cries out for your attention, and find rest by the water or someplace green, a quiet place just to be with God and let God comfort you. Even if certain of your concerns follow you there, because sometimes they will. They do in this gospel. But the disciples watching Jesus with the people who have followed them discover that ministering to people also restores us. Compassion is a regenerative practice. And then you just keep getting in your little boat, as they do, or whatever your vehicle is, whatever takes you to that place of inner quiet, because even the briefest time there can reconnect us and make us calm, put us in touch with gratitude, the best fortification against despair, and remind us of what's good about life. The psalm today, of course, a favorite one, ends with words that we usually hear rendered as, surely goodness and kindness will follow me all the days of my life. And the original language, though, of course, was Hebrew. And the Hebrew is a lot stronger than that. It's more like God's goodness and kindness will pursue me all the days of my life. They will chase me doggedly if necessary. And these days, especially, we have to remember that this is who our God is, determined to run after us with goodness and kindness no matter what, no matter how terrible things seem, no matter how shaky the political situation is, no matter if things seem to be falling apart in our family, in our job, in our relationship, wherever, God will not be discouraged. God's kindness and goodness will keep following us, pursuing us through the darkest valley. It's a subversive thing, actually, to say the Lord is my shepherd, because that's a challenge to all the other would-be shepherds that Jeremiah was talking about, the leaders who misguide and mistreat people. It says their authority isn't ultimate. Even Jeremiah, as pessimistic as he was, remembered God's promise, "I will appoint a shepherd who will shepherd them, so they need not fear and tremble, and none shall be missing. None shall be left out. Black, white, and brown, male, female, trans, non-binary, young, old, and in between, righteous and unrighteous, and spoiler alert, we all have membership in both those categories. I will raise up a shoot to David, God says, who shall reign and govern wisely and shall do what is just in the land." Jesus is that shepherd, no politician. And he talked about the kingdom of God. God is the only one who is king. And what did Jesus picture the kingdom of God to look like? Well, prayer in public schools and the Ten Commandments, of course. No, he talked about the poor having good news brought to them, and the sick being healed, and no one going hungry, and everyone being neighbors to each other, and mercy and forgiveness to all, and everyone finding a place of welcome. The second reading has some beautiful words that sure feel like they've been written just for us today. "You who once were far off have become near, for Christ is our peace, and broke down the dividing wall of enmity. He came to preach peace to those far and near." A true shepherd reminds us of our shared humanity and calls us to reach out to each other, to become shepherds ourselves. The defining characteristic of a shepherd, which we hear is the image consistently used for God, for Jesus, and is the model for the kind of love we're supposed to offer the world, the charism of the shepherd is care. And times of crisis can draw this out in a special way. During the pandemic, the single greatest calamity of our time, we saw many people being transformed more into God's likeness in this way, people shepherding each other as never before. In Spain, police officers on patrol sang to families up in the apartment buildings above them who were on lockdown just to try to give them hope and lift their spirits. Companies gave unexpected wage hikes. A 6-year-old in Australia donated her tooth fairy money to a food drive after hunger skyrocketed. An 8th grader in Japan personally made 612 masks. A farmer in Kansas mailed a then rare N95 mask to a doctor in New York despite having a respiratory ailment himself. College kids brought groceries to homebound, isolated seniors. Farmers donated their milk and their eggs to anyone who needed them for free. Factories changed their operations and went from producing cars to producing ventilators, went from bottling hard cider to bottling hand sanitizer. Countries sent doctors to other countries that were worse hit and in need. People voluntarily redistributed their wealth, giving away their stimulus checks to those who didn't have jobs. This is what a God-centered society looks like, not when we put religious symbols in public places, but when we act as shepherds to one another, becoming God's goodness and kindness. The other day, I got a call from a mom in the parish. She called me because she was planning on marching in the Pride Parade, but she was nervous about it. She had her kids with her. And with things the way they've been, with temperatures so high and hate on the loose, she feared something could happen to her or to them if they went to a big public parade with lots of crowds. So as I'm listening to this, one response and then another flitted through my mind. I wished I could tell her there was no cause to worry. I wished I could say that her fears were unfounded. But I couldn't, because I have those fears too. And so I listened for a long time. And finally I offered every bit as much to myself as to her, all that I've managed to figure out on this hard question. It's natural to feel afraid. The fear comes from things about the world today that are real, and we can't pretend they're not. We can't promise that we'll be safe. But in days like this, when some people fear walking down the street, truly any day, because of the color of their skin, or their gender, or their sexuality, or their citizenship status, or their housing status, for just being who they are, it's especially important for those of us who don't have quite as much to fear to show up and be with them. And so I couldn't say, don't worry, but I said, we should pray. We should stick together. I told this mom to look out for the Spiritus van, because that would be a spot where many people were gathering to put on our beads and our rainbow flags and accompany each other down South Ave. In essence, what I hope I conveyed to her was this. We are gathering in the library. We are gathering in the art room with our colored pens. We've brought our instruments to the band. We've brought our voices to the choir. We still have words to print. We are still determined to put on the play, so don't hide out alone. We may not prick the conscience of the king, but we can decide to pursue with goodness and kindness. We can decide to follow each other with these things no matter what and minister to each other. This is the time to start living as we never have, to start living fiercely, lives the bullies cannot imagine.